Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Every week between 6 and 7 p.m., the TalkSport cricket team come together for 1 hour of cricket chat. And this week, we're talking about the imminent arrival of the biggest show in town, the IPL.
Duplessis goes straight over his head, and six, he wins the game!
Such a big deal, a World T20 was postponed just to make sure it happened. On today's show, you'll find out how close we came to the IPL not happening at all, learn a little bit more about the lengths the teams have gone to make it happen, and find out what players are a six or a wicket away from becoming household names.
Here he goes again. See you later. Oh, that's huge.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Well, alongside me as ever is Jarrod Kimber. Jarrod, as somebody who's worked at pretty much every major domestic T20 competition, why is it that the IPL is still seen as number one?
Well, because everyone goes there. It's
not this year. You know,
well, not as much this year, but there's more money, so everyone gets paid more. But also it is, you know, it's where AB de Villiers and Chris Gayle turn up. It's where, you know, Chris Morris and Andre Russell turn up. Not all those, you know, there's a lot of tournaments around the world. It's very rare that you get, you know, the biggest guys, the most expensive players over and over again. And it's also the only place where the Indians turn up. And that's where the eyeballs of cricket go. So, yeah, it's the biggest for a lot of different reasons, I think.
Okay, Jarrod, so how are we looking then? In terms of the English participants, Joss Butler, Jofra Archer, Tom Curran, and hopefully Ben Stokes at the Rajasthan Royals. Owen Morgan and Tom Banton at Kolkata, Jason Roy, Chris Wokes, Delhi Capitals, Johnny Bairstow at Sunrisers, Moeen Ali at RCB, Sam Curran, Chennai, Chris Jordan, Kings 11, Punjab. We always get excited at this time of the year. We say, oh, there's so many English players playing. And then about four of them play because you can't get them all in the side. So which ones won't play, first off? Which ones will?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I mean, I can't see how Tom Curran gets into the Rajasthan team, so I think we can cross him off straight away. Chris Jordan, I would assume they're going to bring in if they have problems with their death bowling at Kings 11. I don't think he's an automatic starter. Tom Banton's very interesting for me. Again, you know, I talked about Kolkata being very smart. He seems like a very odd decision to play, especially in the UAE. He's quite untested. I would think that they might give him a couple of games and see how he goes, but I don't think he'll play the full tournament. So, yeah, there's a few guys there. I mean, Chris Wokes went for a fortune, didn't he, with RCB a couple of years ago. And since then, he's not seen as the same level of player. Moeen Ali should always be playing for RCB, but over the years, they've not always committed to him that much. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I was part of the reason that they drafted him. As I was consulting for them at the time, and they were saying to me, "What do you think of him?" I said, "I just don't even understand why you're asking. Moeen Ali in the IPL is the most obvious overseas player. You can bat him anywhere from number 1 to 7. You know, he's a very versatile bowler as well. You know, and spins in a long way. He's a brilliant signing for an IPL team, but they've never quite committed to him. So yeah, I think there's a few guys there that they'll be thinking about.
Well, if you look at the RCB lineup, they've got de Villiers, who's an absolute shoe-in as one of their
He'll
overseas.
He'll probably get a game.
I reckon so. Aaron Finch is probably going to get a game. So that's two of the four slots. Chris Morris, you know, you're not going to be picking between Moeen Ali and Chris Morris, are you? But you might be, and then Dale Steyn is also, not sure if you've heard of him either. But there's Adam Zampa. So it looks like it could be a essentially between those two, isn't it? I know they're different bowlers, but, you know, it could be Moeen Ali's batting on one day, or it could be Adam Zampa's leg spin on another, I guess. It's as simple as that. And that's part of the problem, isn't it?
It's how you fit them in. I mean, if you think about it, what you might look at is how many runs you would Aaron Finch will get you in a season. How many less runs will Moeen Ali get you, considering that you then have a frontline bowler in your top seven? That might be the only thing that you might think with someone like Finch. But having paid the money for Finch, who has done so well in so many IPL seasons, you know, it's very hard. And they're going to have to pick one. You know, Chris Morris and Dale Steyn might switch around a little bit. But as you said, Zampa's there as well. The problem is a lot of the structure is that I don't think they really think about the best way to structure the players around. They don't. A lot of T20 teams and RCB are the absolute worst when it comes to this. They don't really look at all the different cases. You should have a lot more role players on your bench. You know, sort of single use overseas players. But what they've gone for is, I can't. Other than Dale Steyn, who I think might have gone a little bit cheaper. It looks like they spent a lot of money on their overseas players. When realistically, you can't play them all.
Let's have a look.
And that's where Chennai have been so good over the years at doing the opposite of that.
We'll look at Chennai in a second, but if we look at Kolkata, it's the same thing, really. I mean, you've got Andre Russell, who's absolutely going to play.
Probably.
You've got Sunil Narine, who's absolutely going to play, okay? So there's two of your four.
You've just paid more money for Pat Cummins than anyone else ever. So there's three.
Okay? So then in and around that, you've got Lachie Ferguson, who just won't play if Pat Cummins plays, I imagine.
Agree.
You've got Owen Morgan, who's sat out more IPL seasons than any other player, probably. Chris Green, who's an interesting one in himself. Ali Khan and Tom Banton. So it's, I mean, maybe actually Banton will get a knock, because if he's going to play up the order, he may actually get more game time than Owen Morgan.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. I mean, I see Banton and Chris Green as guys that they can bring in for specific games and for specific matchups. Chris Green is obviously not very well known in the UK, but he's a little bit like an Australian version of Johan Botha, but he smacks the ball around a little bit further. But, you know, very dour off spin. He's not an exciting cricketer, but he's certainly a very effective one in T20 cricket. But the Kolkata squad, it goes back to what I was just saying. They've got Pat Cummins and Lachie Ferguson. And when Harry Gurney wasn't available, because he would have been in their squad, they brought in Ali Khan. So they've just brought in a third overseas quick bowler. And again, you start to look at these things and you go, where are they going to fit all these guys in? They've already got Andre Russell. If Andre Russell bowls as well, they've now got four out-and-out quick bowlers. You probably only need one in the team. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You'd really be better off, I think, to pick a bunch of guys like Tom Banton and Chris Green, who are young players who can, if they break out, then you've got them for the next couple of years, or, you know, certainly the availability to sign them for the next couple of years, and a bunch of different role players who cover different things. But it just seems like this Kolkata squad, and I hate doubting Kolkata because I think they're so clever at what they do, but it doesn't make sense. And there's every chance that Tom Banton and Owen Morgan between them play about three games.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Johnny Bairstow should get a game. Him and David Warner, they had a great little partnership at the top of the order, didn't they? Which is strange in itself. But
you can't break that up, can you? They were so good together. I mean,
phenomenal.
You know, how the overseas players are going to work there, you would assume Bairstow and Warner go.
Yeah.
And then they've got the two Afghanistanis in Mohammad Nami and Rashid Khan.
Yeah.
So if you pick those four overseas, Sunrisers suddenly look like a very, very good team. But they've got Fabian Allen on the bench.
They do, yeah.
Who I really, really like. But again, a bit like a lot of these English players, I'm not sure how he gets a game. The good thing with Fabian Allen is you don't have to play him because he's also the best fielder in the world. So he could literally be a 12th man and probably still be worth 5 or 10 runs a game.
Yeah, I quite like Sunrisers, to be honest with you. Let's have a look at Chennai. You mentioned Chennai and the balance they've got. With the IPL, I wouldn't say that. When you think of a player now, and the first shirt that comes to mind when I say... So I was to say to you, MS Dhoni, what's the first shirt that comes to mind? Probably still is an India shirt, but the Chennai yellow isn't too far behind. And there's players like that, isn't it? They've really made their identity now as nearly as much with their IPL team as it is with their national team. You know, Lassie's Malinga, who's not playing this year, but, you know, in the Mumbai Blue, for instance. Even Shane Watson, he's probably loved more in India through playing for playing IPL than he is in Australia. But MS Dhoni's back anyway. He's going to be captaining Chennai. Dwayne Bravo, this is an old team. Faf du Plessis, Imran Tahir. I mean, how old are these guys? Shane Watson's still in the side. I mean, there's an average age of about 40. But then Sam Curran brings it down slightly.
Yeah, they've got a couple of young players, but you're right. I mean, it's a very, very old team. And, that, you know, Stephen Fleming, who I work with at Melbourne Stars, he likes that. And they've won titles with incredibly old teams. I think 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote a piece about Chennai. They're a really interesting team because they don't follow any modern trends. They still play T20 like it was a few years ago, but because they have so many experienced players who know their roles. I mean, you've got someone like Faf du Plessis, who is a bit like Kane Williamson. I mean, he doesn't play that many games, but he's there, I think, to guide the younger players and provide sort of captaincy support for MS Dhoni at times, which might sound weird, but they have a very interesting relationship. But yeah, you've got then guys like Kedar Yadav and even Ravi Jadeja now, who's quite old, Rayadu, Santner's at that team as well. It's a very, and as you said, Watson before, and Rayner would have been playing as well.
Yeah, I mean, Rayner would have been there.
Yeah, Rayner must be, you know, mid-30s as well. So it's a very old experience. Everyone knows their role in that team. I think they might have taken it as far as they can when it comes to the ages of these players. But, you know, you don't count them out because they are so clever. The fact that they've got guys like Santner and Ngidi and Hazelwood has come in and Du Plessis and Sam Curran and Dwayne Bravo. Everyone plays an individual role. They can chop and change a lot more with their team for the conditions and the opposition. Whereas, as you've already said, but a lot of these teams, they can't do that.
Let's look at Mumbai then. Let's finish up. No English player within the ranks. But
they don't need them.
Well, they don't, do they? You know, they've got Kieran Pollard. They've got your favourite bowler in international cricket, Mitchell McLenaghan. They've got Quinton de Kock, Trent Bolt, of course. He's a funny one, isn't he? They spent a lot of money on him and then didn't really play him that much. Chris Lynn, Nathan Coulter, and right at the bottom of the list, James Pattinson, almost a forgotten man of Australian fast bowling, when arguably he should be the best one.
Yeah, again, it's Pattinson, it's McLenaghan, it's Nathan Coulter-Nile, it's Trent Bolt, and you're just like, well, that's four seamers there. How are you going to fit all these guys in? I expect Quinton de Kock to finally have a, you know, a huge tournament for them. I don't think he's ever had a huge IPL tournament, and, you know, we all know how good he is. It's going to happen eventually. Kieran Pollard would just looked in, played some of the absolute innings of the
CPL.
Just an incredible there. James Pattinson's really interesting because he's never been a great T20 player. He's played some incredible games. I think I've seen him go for 60 runs in a T20 game, or it felt like that many. And he's also taken, you know, five for none in other games. He can also bat. So he's kind of like you discount Pat Cummins at a certain thing. But realistically, that middle order is phenomenal. To have the two Pandya brothers, everyone talks about Hardik Pandya because of what he's done for India. But Krunal Pandya, I think, is an even better T20 player than Hardik is. And then to slap Kieran Pollard in the middle. They on paper, again, look like the best team. Guys like Ishan Kishan, who's not that well known. But, you know, if one of those young Indian players has a breakout year as well, there's... anything could happen. They also have someone who, again, won't get much playing time, but Shafain Rutherford, a big fan of him out of the West Indies, a very, very interesting player. So, on paper, they look really good. And it's interesting to say that because, obviously, one of the withdrawn players is Lassith Malinga, but I just don't think that affects them.
Billings, he goes over his head. Should be six more. It's six more. Into the sunscreen. Russell, 67. Will he go again? Of course he will. Of course he goes again. Six, six, six. Saudi bowls in. No question there. Kishan Bolt, first ball.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. This week we're talking about the IPL, which gets underway on Saturday, and you can cover and follow all of the action on TalkSport 2. We'll be bringing you extended coverage every weekday from 2:30. the two teams that perennially underachieved, Delhi Capitals, they changed their name. They've got, I mean, you know, any team with Ricky Ponting at the in charge. And they've actually got some real excitement. Kemo Paul, one of many West Indies players within the IPL. Shimron Hetmeyer, you know, we watched him play, didn't we, at the start of last year. Marcus Stoinis, if he plays at the top of the order, he's certainly impressed. Henrik Nortje, the player that we saw at the start of the year, playing for South Africa. How do you see them going?
The team doesn't make sense to me. Delhi Capitals always kind of looks like this. You look at them on paper, and I don't understand how this team comes together. They've gone big with Ravi Ashwin and Shikhar Dhawan, you know, with their Indian players. They've got Amit Mishra, who I think is the highest wicket-taker in CPL history. But they do have Rizbah Pant. Look, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, they've got Prithvi Shaw as well.
Yeah, I'm just not sure how it all comes together. It'd be interesting to see if Kemo Paul goes over, because he pulled out of the England
He did, didn't he?
Series as well.
Well, so did Hetmeyer.
Yeah. Oh, of course, he did too. So it'd be very interesting to see if they go over. I'm assuming they will, now that they've seen that the other tour went well. I think their original fear was probably more that it wouldn't, you know, that it wouldn't work, and that it did. And you've got to understand too, you know, with someone like Kemo Paul, he's a provider for his whole family.
Yeah, also,
he was very worried about that.
These guys have just had their retainers cut by 50%. This is where they earn their year's money. You know, you don't want to be going to England, bowl 40 overs and then pull a hamstring and then miss out on the IPL. Sorry, but that's just, you know, I can understand why anyone would think that. Lastly, Kings 11 Punjab, Chris Gayle, is he still playing? He didn't even play in the CPL, did he? I can't even remember. KL Rahul, let's have a look at some of their overseas. Nicholas Puran, he pulled out of the, didn't he pull out of the England tour? It was Puran rather than Kemo Paul, wasn't it? Anyway, Glenn Maxwell, Sheldon Cottrell, Jimmy Neesham, everyone's favourite Kiwi, and Chris Jordan as well, who we mentioned earlier on.
Yeah, really interesting team here. They can put Chris Gayle, Glenn Maxwell together, and Nicholas Puran as well. that could be one of the most exciting sort of three, and they all bat in different positions. So, you know, sometimes when we talk about this, everyone's an opener. But in this particular case, you know, Gayle opens, Maxwell bats at three, and Puran bats at four or five. It's kind of great. And they've all got, I don't know if you remember him, Sarfaraz Khan.
Of course, the youngster who was RCB, wasn't he?
RCB got rid of KL Rahul to keep Sarfaraz Khan.
That's right.
Which might have been the end of my my time with Bangalore. I was so upset with him for that one. But, you know, if anyone ever seen him, he does not look athletic at all, but he has one of the best hand-eye coordination that you'll ever see. And he hits the ball. So they've got a lot of guys there who can really whack the ball around. You know, looking at that team, it'd be interesting to see sort of where they go. I don't, you know, Sheldon Cottrell probably for me is the fourth bowler, the fourth overseas player, sorry, that comes in. So Chris Jordan does go out. But if I remember correctly, Chris Gayle didn't play in the CPL because he was changing clubs, and the club he changed to, he had a falling out with, and he just didn't play, which is kind of ridiculous, but that's, I suppose, where we are in the T20 leagues at the moment.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on Talk Sport 2. Myself, John Norman, and Jared Kimber alongside me. Now, guest on Sports Day on Talk Sport 2 was Indian cricket writer and friend of the station, Chetan Narula, running the eye over the English players that will be taking part in this year's competition.
We are very, very glad that we have English cricketers in the IPL now, because there was a time when they were not participating for obvious reasons, clashed with the English summer, to be honest. But since things have changed that, you know, English cricket needs to concentrate on white ball cricket, and they have done well, haven't they? So it's really great to see all these English cricketers here in the IPL, and, you know, people like Jos Buttler, Ben Stokes, we have Tom Curran and Sam Curran this year, we have Joshua Archer coming this year, Ewan Morgan, and Jason Roy. They have set a light. We have had Moeen Ali at RCB. We have Chris Jordan. Each of them bring so much expertise with the white ball, so much excitement. I mean, look at Ian Morgan, so much experience. Sure. He surely accentuates Kolkata Knight Riders with all the experience. They need leadership figures, and with Morgan around there, World Cup winning captain, Jofra Archer with his pace, Ben Stokes, Jos Buttler, all-rounders again, Chris Jordan, I think he's a really quality depth bowler. Moeen Ali, again, an all-rounder. So Sam Curran, Tom Curran, the Curran brothers, such exciting cricketers. So again, it brings an element we were missing this element. Let me just say that. We were missing this element in the IPL, and it's just so much good fun to have these cricketers here.
That was Chetan Narula speaking with Paul Coit on TalkSport 2's Sports Day breakfast show. One of the points that's always made about the IPL is that it's beneficial for players themselves to play in it, because the argument goes, forget the fact that they're in there for the money, essentially, and the just the sheer excitement and glory of playing in front of packed houses normally. But of course, the fact that the Indian players can't play in any of the other tournaments, isn't that not seen as a... Why is that never seen as a detraction from their abilities to play cricket at the highest level when it comes to World T20s and 50-over competitions?
I actually think that's been mentioned a lot. When India have struggled in white ball cricket over the last couple of years, their fan base has started to say everyone else has the advantage of playing in India and outside of India, whether it's your home conditions or whether you're like Kyron Pollard or Dwayne Bravo and you play in every single competition there is, sometimes concurrently. You know, I think that's a huge advantage. And the best international T20 team around the world has been the West Indies. They've won two tournaments. They probably would have won a third if they'd kept half their team together for 2014. And they go around the world playing in all these tournaments. They play more T20 games than anyone else. I think Kyron Pollard's played the most, and I think Dwayne Bravo might have played the second most, and Chris Gayle's not far away at the top of that list as well. So they are experienced, they understand the game. Indian players don't play that much T20 cricket, and they don't play it outside of India, although, to be fair, they are going to be playing this one in the UAE, and they did play one IPL in South Africa, but, you know, in general, they don't play that much, and it is something that people have started to talk about. It's very interesting watching the similar sort of arguments that go on that you know, once had in English football about their Premier League. And that's what this was based on, really. It's a combination of sort of American leagues and the English Football League. And similar sorts of things start to happen. You know, are the young players developing in the right way? Yeah, they get access to, you know, the best coaches around the world. But then what happens for the next 10 months? And I've talked to some of the coaches quite a lot, and they'll say it's that period between the tournaments that they don't think the IPL is still, you know, a top tier tournament, you know, when it comes to compared to the development that Crystal Palace would have or the Denver Nuggets would have, or, you know, even you know, lower league professional competitions around the world. So that's definitely starting to happen, and of course that only stops when India start to win major tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, they don't own the players outside this two-month period, do they? That's the major difference. San Francisco 49ers or Crystal Palace, they own their players and can do whatever they want with their players for 12 months a year.
It's one of the big problems in all T20 cricket is this like a real lack of development of good young players because of what you've just said. So when I was with St. Lucia, that was one of my things, was to get them on development contracts for the rest of the year so I could get them with a coach 3 or 4 times a year, so I could get them with their fitness, you know, all those sorts of things that you need to make sure. And I remember there being a young player at RCB who they were really looking at developing, and they thought they'd done heaps of work with him, and he went back to his local team and they completely changed the role that he played when he played domestic cricket in India. And he came back, you know, 2 months before the next IPL season, and they had to start him up again. And it's not just them either. I remember Travis Head, it might have been an RCB as well. I can't remember which team Travis Head played for, but they really worked on Travis Head in, you know, manipulating singles and against spinners and then hitting big against spinners when he had to. And he came back 9 months later, and they had to start again. It's a huge problem with that game, and you can see why, you know, that's the problem with having all these individual pop-up leagues rather than one or two, you know, giant leagues.
Can you not foresee a return to, not the, Tim Wigmore wrote a piece about a month or so ago saying that the cricket bods are looking at relaunching the Champions League, the Cricket Champions League, which I watched, and I'm sure you did, but nobody else did. So, yeah, can you not foresee a time when actually the top teams in every single T20 league actually come together and create their own breakaway, or however they do it, league, which actually it does go on for 12 months a year, and they do retain their players. And it wouldn't be a six-week tournament. It would be staggered across, say, 10 months of the year, maybe like, you know, one game a month or something. I can't quite work it out. But it does seem to me that there are clubs or franchises that do have a recognisable brand outside of their own country. And it actually would be a good way of moving the T20 game forward.
Look, there's no doubt. I mean, this is what the original breakaway was, that when Lalit Modi was chatting to some of the England bosses that became such a big problem back in English cricket, what, almost 10 years ago now, maybe even longer, maybe 12 years ago now, that teams were already starting to think about that. Here's my problem. When we did the Champions League, there was lots of sort of different problems within that. One was, as you've just said, that, you know, Corin Pollard, Dirk Nannis, I think Cameron White, qualified for about four teams each.
Yeah.
Which straight away meant it was ridiculous.
Yes.
Then you had the fact that they almost rigged the system to make sure that the Indian teams made the finals.
Yeah. Because they allowed them to have more overseas players, didn't they? Because I think Mumbai had some injuries. So they're like, it's changed the rules.
It wasn't an injury. It was even better than that, John. Mumbai said one of their players was injured. They brought in a fifth overseas player to cover that player. And then that player went and played club cricket and made 100 that week. just to show what a sham that tournament was. So that is certainly something that has got slightly better. So you do have that. But the thing was that it's very hard to get the ratings up for when... okay, let's take Otago out. But we, you know, when Trimbago are playing against Surrey, you're still going to struggle, I think, with the ratings. And that's where that particular competition is a problem. But you're not wrong. I mean, it would be a very, very strong system. You would be able to keep the players in. It would move T20 cricket forward. It would make the international scene have to reevaluate. Look, there's a lot of good things there. I'm just not sure there's enough money in that particular idea. The real money would be in one of two things, either having two IPLs, having the big one at the start of the year, and having a small sort of FA Cup style one later in the year, where perhaps you could then bring in, you might have all the IPL teams in it. They automatically all qualify, but then you have teams from other competitions come in for that for 3 or 4 weeks. Which is a possibility. The other one is that the most obvious thing is if this is really going to work, this idea, and T20 is a proper sustainable sport, then you need a proper season. You need at least a 5-month season. And that's what I think the IPL think they will be able to do within the next 5 to 10 years. And if that's the case, that's going to change cricket again massively. But it is the only way for T20 cricket to be serious. If it is to be a serious sport, then it needs one of these competitions, and the IPL is the most logical, to have a proper season.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Still to come on the show, we will be crossing over to the UAE to hear just how this... competition has been put together. We'll be speaking to one of the big bosses at the Rajasthan Royals. You're listening to TalkSport 2, the Cricket Collective, thanks to the Institute of Cricket.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Third one inside the power play, and he's in. He's bowled and he's hit for six over long on. What a shot from Josh Butler.
Stokes in again. Sticking.
Small, isn't it? And it's been taken. Stokes has done it again.
In goes Archer. Round the wicket. It's up. Bat pad. He's got it.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Myself, John Norman, Jarrod Kimber alongside me, looking ahead to the start of the IPL, which gets underway on Saturday. You can follow the action on TalkSport 2 from Mondays through to Fridays every afternoon. Delighted to say that Jake Lush-McCrum, the COO of Rajasthan Royals, joins us now from UAE, where he's been ensconced for the last 3 weeks or so. Jake, thanks so much for joining us on the show. Can you give us some idea of just how much work has been put in behind the scenes to get the IPL up and running this year, given the backdrop of coronavirus, which, of course, has affected everything?
Yeah, there's been a huge amount of work over the last 3 to 4 months since the postponement of the tournament. I think the BCCI have been working extremely hard to find solutions, and thankfully they found a great partner in the UAE to host it, who have hosted it before. There have obviously been several challenges around COVID testing, travel, etc., to get the boys over here. And then there's basically ensuring they have their mental well-being as big a focus for us as possible, because it is very challenging being in a bubble for this length of time. I mean, thankfully, we've got a great facility here, a private beach, and many other features to keep them engaged. But there are still challenges, and it's just so important to keep being really adaptable and flexible during this time.
Just on a basic sort of logistics thing, when you're putting together your roster, you're obviously putting it together for smaller Indian grounds. I know the UAE pitches and the Indian pitches are similar, but you've lost your home advantage, all those sorts of things. Has that come into your thinking with the way that you've put your squad together at all?
Yes, I think we have a slight advantage there in the sense that Jaipur is probably the most similar to the Abu Dhabi Dubai pitches as any in the IPL. So, we've built a team to obviously perform in every ground and have the flexibility to execute on every ground, but, with a favour to the Jaipur wicket and the big pitch there. So I think we're accustomed to that, and hence the players actually we think will perform well on these wickets. With regards to Sharjah, again, within your squad, you've always got to have the flexibility to perform in Bangalore, to perform in Eden Gardens, which are differing wickets inside stadiums. So I think, we believe we've got that diversity and that strength and depth in the squad to perform. And we won in Eden Gardens and should have won in Bangalore last year if it hadn't been for the rain. So, I think we're well prepared.
Jake, news has come from the ECB today of widespread redundancies and due totally because of coronavirus. What kind of future would the Rajasthan Royals and other IPL teams have been facing if the IPL hadn't taken place this year?
I think a lot of sports organisations and teams are facing challenges across the board with the IPL. So we'd actually secured insurance this year to cover a number of our new streams, which was important to us. But also, with the flexibility of our cash flow and our cash flow management over the last few years, we were in a position where we could sort of manage that if there hadn't been one. However, we were always confident in the BCCI finding a solution for it.
Just on England, you obviously have a lot of English players. Outside of Lords, was it last year or the year before, you had people promoting the team. Why has it been so important for Rajasthan to, be known as sort of England's IPL team, which is kind of where you're going with it?
Yeah, I think we want to have an IPL team with global appeal, and having four English stars in our team and all World Cup winners, gives us a stronger base here. We've obviously got his owner, Manoj Badali, who's based out of the UK and has a portfolio of businesses there. And hence, we've got the sort of on-ground resource to support that. We've launched an academy in the last year and are looking to launch more. And we want to really, we want to give back to both players in the grassroots network and fans, and bring them closer to the action. So by having the Stokes Butlers, Joffres and Tom Currans in the side, we hope to excite the sort of English public around IPL. The growth in viewership has been quite significant over the last couple of years as more and more English players are involved in it. And we hope that the majority of them are supporting the Rajasthan Royals this season.
Jake, and is there any word on when we can expect Ben Stokes to play?
I think you probably saw Andrew McDonald's interview with ESPN yesterday. I mean, Ben is spending time with his family, and that's the most important thing. We're in constant touch with him and the full family there, and giving him all the support and flexibility that he needs. Whenever we do get information around that, we will share it. But family is the most important thing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And thoughts with Ben and his family, of course. One of the topics that myself and Jared were speaking about earlier in the show was how the IPL, of course, only takes place 6 weeks a year, two months a year. How does your job differ in and outside of tournament time? And is when you sign up players, it seems to me that Rajasthan are the leaders in the market in some regard, insofar that you seem to have a relationship with the players outside of that competition window in a way that the other teams don't quite do. Would that be fair in saying?
I think it's really important for us to have that year-round relationship, as you say. We build both a player development plan around them, but also an engagement plan with them. So whether it's when the English boys are in London and Manoj and myself look to catch up, or when I'm over in Mumbai and around India, we look to sort of connect with them. So the fact is, they all have their support networks, both family, friends, but also cricket in each of their structures. However, we do believe we can add value to the development of their game through the year. And whether they move on or not at the end of the year, we're happy to provide that support to them. So whether it's Stephen Jones as our fast bowling development coach, spends a huge amount of time with our Indian fast bowlers through the year, working with them on technical improvement, S&C. If they were to move to another franchise after a year, we don't mind that investment, because that's our commitment to the players as part of this franchise. And I think they respond really positively to that.
It's been very interesting. You talked about Andrew McDonald, your coach, earlier. So obviously Andrew McDonald, who's coached in the UK and is an Australian, former Australian cricketer. He's obviously involved with the Australian team now, but is also your coach. Do you have to spend a lot of time with Cricket Australia trying to work out how that relationship works?
We signed up Andrew before the Australian team did, and we were very clear in that deal with us to, around IPL, he has to be here X number of days before, and he's completely supportive of that, because that's what he needs to ensure that the processes are in place and the development's in place to get our team ready to execute. So thankfully, we've got that clarity. Cricket Australia have been really supportive around that as well. But Andrew's 100% sort of committed to the franchise, and we've been absolutely delighted with the work he's done so far.
And in terms of the fact that we could be having IPL now and also IPL in March, is that something that actually would be something that you would favour? Something that actually work to your strengths as a club, having two IPLs coming so close to each other?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. I think 6 months of sort of continuous traction around the tournament. There is always an auction in between as well. That's another huge event that could be there. So it's a great time to engage new fans and sort of deepen the relationship with your current fans through this period. We've got a huge focus around our digital piece. We're launching a fan engagement app tomorrow. And we've got many other areas with the Digital Academy and online education courses and our social channels as well. So it's a great chance for us to really give them an insight into the franchise and have them follow us all through, and then follow those players' journeys with their international teams, and then coming back to us in April and hopefully competing and finishing high up in the table and competing in the playoffs and the final.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, Jake, I really appreciate you taking some time out of what must be an incredibly busy schedule. Go well for the tournament, and we'll certainly be following all the action from Rajasthan Royals and the other IPL teams. But yeah, brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us on the Cricket Collective.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
That was Jake Lush-McCrum. And I mean, Jared, when it comes to Rajasthan Royals, they certainly do set the bar high when it comes to their relationship with the media, essentially, in one regard. Certainly, I don't think it would be possible to get chief operating officers from many IPL teams at such short notice that we got on the Cricket Collective this week.
No, they do operate in a different way, partly because you've got to remember that Rajasthan is a different kind of market. In Kolkata and Mumbai, I don't think they care as much about the English market. Whereas for Rajasthan, I think it's a realistic aim for them to look to be the more global team, to get People don't know that much about Rajasthan, so it can almost be, you know, the Royals can almost be a team for many different fans from outside. Also, they had the sort of romantic start, you know, coming from nowhere, picking up a bunch of very cheap options in that first IPL draft, coming from nowhere and winning. It's a very, very interesting franchise, I think, and they do a lot of very good things. Even you know, having an Australian coach who's their coach, it's, everything about them is quite interesting. Also, you know, the fact that they have gone after so many England players. Mm. There was a long time in the IPL where teams wouldn't go for England players at all. They felt that the England players were quite often would put themselves too high up when it came to their cost. And obviously, before Andrew Strauss got involved, England players weren't always available at the right times, all those sorts of things. But Rajasthan have gone all in, haven't they?
Vinay Kumar bowls to Jadeja. He leaves no doubt whatsoever. Hitting it out on the ground into the top deck of my line.
Saudi bowls in.
No question there. Kishan Bolt, first ball.
Dead up in again. Village, pick that. Pick that out the back row. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. This week we're talking about the IPL, which gets underway on Saturday, and you can cover and follow all of the action on TalkSport 2. We'll be bringing you extended coverage every weekday from 2:30. Let's cross to Australia, though, now. Gav Joshi, who is a freelance cricket writer and expert in the IPL, joins us on the show. Gav, thanks for joining us. Just I suppose a quick question. It's interesting to cross to Australia because, you know, we should have been looking forward to the World T20. But when it came to it, such is the strength of the IPL, that the World T20 was postponed. And I know there was coronavirus situation in and around that and travelling teams internationally. But give us an idea of where the IPL now sits in the international cricket calendar as a domestic competition notionally, and just how important it was for cricket that the IPL was taking place.
Well, you just have to look at the revenue market. And firstly, thanks for having me on the show. But yeah, I mean, you just have to look, the amount of revenue the BCCI generates out of IPL is just phenomenal. I think it's $7 or $8 million they get from the broadcasters per game, which is right up there with an EPL game or even getting close to a Super Bowl. So you think over time that might even catch up. But in context to, you know, with the World T20 being cancelled, what I found surprising is how open Australia has been to the IPL in terms of its even coaching staff. I mean, Justin Langer understands that, I mean, especially given cricket in the state that it's in, that it's vital for Australia to host India this summer. So they didn't want to upset anyone. And for that, Justin Langer even came out saying, well, you know, we have to take it on the chin that some of our players, if the IPL runs in parallel with the domestic competition, some of our star players have to be made available to the IPL. So the perception's changed about the IPL. I think people have started to understand, even in Australia, that how important it is for the Aussie players to head over there. One thing people forget is, I think total value of the Australian IPL players this year is about close to $15 million, and 10% of that goes back to Cricket Australia. That's just how the revenue model works. So it's pretty important, and especially with the T20 getting cancelled, something to look forward to. The only thing why IPL probably doesn't get on the front pages or the back pages is the time zones. It's not the right time zones. We're not as lucky as what it is in India or even England, for that matter.
Gav, just on the UAE and the IPL moving there, a few years ago they obviously played there, and I think it was around the elections, wasn't it? And they had to move the tournament,
yep.
the first half of the tournament. How much does that affect, you know, we've seen with Pakistan over the years that, you know, playing away from home can affect things, especially in the UAE, which can be a bit of a mood hoover when it comes to watching cricket. How much do you think that will affect the IPL?
Well, I don't think it would affect it hugely, but in the initial part of the IPL. I think, you know, as we get after maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and it is a long tournament, and I think players are certainly going to start missing, you know, the simple components. I mean, in the IPL, it's fantastic because you have, you know, Bollywood celebrities around you. You have your friends and family. And generally in India, the players do get pampered a lot. You've got 3 people to, you know, pick up your equipment and so forth. So initially, I think, especially the long layoff that all the cricketers have had, they'll be itching to play. But I think especially for a team that certainly doesn't start too well, you know, there could be problems because we've seen, you know, someone like Suresh Raina go home. Who knows, we could have, you know, a few other players opting to just say, well, I got to get out of the bubble here because it's too hectic. In terms of cricketing perspective, I don't think much is going to change because you probably know better than I do, Jared, that the conditions are fairly similar over there. But I think my concern is especially for teams, if they start slipping off the radar, we could get a bit of problems with some of the youngsters because, you know, suddenly staying in the bubble and doing things on your own is probably not something that they're accustomed to.
And just on the whole tournament, I mean, one of the things that the IPL is famous for, and this is going to sound a bit ridiculous, but is cheerleaders. you know, it sort of brought cheerleaders into cricket. I mean, originally, I think they hired the NFL cheerleaders and brought them straight over. And then, you know, some teams have their own local cheerleaders, and it's a very weird thing. Is this not going to prove that the IPL does no longer need cheerleaders? Because surely they're not going to have cheerleaders in an empty ground.
Well, we're not, but I'm looking forward to what the host broadcast is going to do. I'm sure you've heard of it, Jared, back here when we've had the rugby league matches and even some AFL matches, that the broadcasters have actually, you know, induced some sound into the broadcast. So, hey, who knows? Star Sports might just have these cheerleaders sitting in a studio and they just might merge them in. You never know. But I'm really curious to see because I think it's a new zone for the broadcasters. And, you know, with India, with so many people, it's going to be interesting to see how the cricket is presented to the audience because that's the real big deal.
Let's hear from Pat Cummins, actually, record signing for Kolkata Knight Riders.
We know what we're signing up for. You know, we've been to IPLs before of similar length, so we'll get ahead around that. We're used to long tours as cricketers. In terms of safety, I've got no worries at all. Hearing the lengths that they've gone to try and protect, you know, the tournament, the players and the staff is huge. We see it firsthand here in England. Literally no stones left unturned. So, you know, we've hardly seen anyone. We feel really safe, and I'm sure it's going to be the same over there from what I've heard. So, now excited to get over there and play. Know it's going to be and feel a little bit differently to what normal IPLs feel like, but you know, hopefully the cricket's the same.
Gav, quick question on Patrick Cummins: is he the real deal when it comes to T20? Is he a guy that wears that kind of pressure comfortably on his shoulders?
Well, the one thing I always look at is, you know, in the IPL, you look at the bowlers and what IPL franchises want them to be is win matches with the ball, not just at the front end, but towards the back end. And Australia's had the great luxury of having, you know, someone like Mitchell Starc or even a death specialist like an Andrew Tai. And Pat Cummins hasn't played a lot of T20 cricket for Australia. And if he has, he hasn't been renowned as a death bowler. There's a couple of experts around him. So 3.16 million tag. I think people are going to be looking at him closely. I think Calcutta are probably going to look at him as a death overs, or he'll need to bowl a couple of overs at the death and win the matches. So I reckon there's plenty of pressure on him to see how he goes. And IPL, you know, it's not as easy as you think. There are some great batsmen in there. You know, imagine bowling to someone like AB de Villiers or even a Kohli or someone like Hardik Pandya even. So I think it's a huge challenge. Is he worth that much? Well, time will tell, but 3.16, that is a heck of a lot of money. He better be, you know, winning KKR some matches.
Brilliant stuff, Gav. And before you go, your tip for the title this year?
I'm going to just stick with someone like still a Mumbai Indians. They're just such a professional unit. They do their research so well. I mean, you know, the greatest strength is that 5, 6, and 7, you know, Roach, Armas, they're up the top, but Curran, Pollard and the two Pandya brothers, I don't think any other team have that much strength at 5, 6, 7. So who knows, back to back, nobody's, I think Chennai Super Kings the only one to do it, but I reckon I'm backing them, and I think Abu Dhabi might suit them as well. So Mumbai Indians for me.
Come on then, let's both tip a team that's definitely not going. Although I did tip Trimbago to win the CPL, which was,
well, everyone tipped Trimbago to
no,
win the CPL.
You tipped Have you Jamaica. Seen their squad? Yeah, but you no, tipped Jamaica.
I said Jamaica would be you, the most fun.
No,
team.
That's not true. You tipped Jamaica.
You have to get back to the tape on that.
You tipped Jamaica. Who are you tipping for the IPL? Because it's well, I suppose it's one of four, isn't it? Chennai, mm-hmm. KKR, Mumbai, or Sunrisers. I suppose you could put Rajasthan in there as well.
Yeah,
where
like
you
Sunrises.
Where are you going? Sunrisers. Yeah. You're going Sunrisers.
Yeah, I think their squad comes together. They're always very clever, and I think you kind of back Rashid Khan to begin with, and then you work back from there. So I think they're in a really good position. But I mean, Mumbai probably still have the best squad.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for Kolkata, because look, any team that's got Sun or Narine in it is basically, I have to like them. it was one of my biggest disappointments in recent years is that he never played Test cricket. In fact, he doesn't really play that much for West Indies in general, but I love watching him play. So I'm going to go for Kolkata. So just so, look, the producer here, can we just get clarification? Who is Jared? Is Jared just saying who's going to be the most fun team to watch, or is he actually tipping a team to win there?
No. I think you'll find that I said Jamaica was the most fun team. I'm saying that Sunrisers are not a fun team. If you want me to pick the most fun team, let's go back to Puran, Gale and Maxwell, because that could be awesome.
There are a lot of fun teams in the IPL. And you can follow it here on TalkSport 2. We will have extended coverage for you every midweek afternoon, starting from next week. That's pretty much it, Jared. Thanks for your time, mate. Brilliant as ever. We will be reunited after the third ODI between England and Australia, following on podcast, looking back at that match and the series. And I tell you what, actually, Jared, so I missed the second ODI for reasons that are too boring to go into, but every single time I get Guy Swindles to report on a game on TalkSport, it always ends up being an absolute classic. So maybe I'll just give Wednesday's game a miss. Do everyone a favour. Anyway, Jared, thanks for your time, and thank you for listening to TalkSport 2. This has been the Cricket Collective. A lot of fun. We will be back next week as well, and don't forget the following on podcast every week on Acast, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. This has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.